is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us for a special pre-recorded program while VOA headquarters resolves some technical issues. I'm Yeis Wuhib. And coming up,
the rights group says 8 journalists have been killed since the administration led by President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo came to power 3 years ago. 5 journalists were killed by Al-Shabaab attacks.
That was Muhammad Yusuf reporting on Somali press freedom. Plus, we hear about an effort to save disappearing languages in Cameroon. And South Sudanese students are stranded in Ethiopia. Those stories and more next on this special VOA Africa program. In 2019, 2 journalists were killed in Somalia, a low number by Somali standards, but the Somali Journalist Syndicate reports that more than 50 journalists were arrested and 81 were attacked while doing their job. The group defends the rights of the journalists in Horn of Africa nations. The group also says Somali security agencies stopped journalists 15 times as they tried to access government offices and areas. Muhammad Yusuf reports.
The Amnesty International report entitled We Live in Perpetual Fear details harassment, intimidation and killings of journalists by militant group Al-Shabaab, police and various government officials. The threats on Somali journalists have created a climate of fear, says Deprois Moshena, the head of Amnesty International in East and Southern Africa.
This fear is experienced through a range of violations that are physical in nature, which include physical attacks, arbitrary arrests of journalists, killings by both the armed group Al-Shabaab and the government forces, in particular in the one case. And then the disturbing accompanying point and observation we make is that for all these violations, there is actually no concluded investigations that have been done in order for us to say impunity is now being addressed.
The rights group says 8 journalists have been killed since the administration led by President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo came to power 3 years ago. 5 journalists were killed by Al-Shabaab attacks, 2 by unknown gunmen, and 1 was murdered by a police officer. Abdullahi Hassan, an Amnesty International Somali researcher, told reporters in Nairobi that journalists were attacked for doing their work.
Most of the times when these physical attacks happened, they happened in a context where journalists were trying to cover what they call sensitive stories. These sensitive stories include reporting on Al-Shabaab attacks, reporting on corruption, reporting on human rights violations, and reporting on issues that are perceived to be critical of the government.
Another 8 Somali journalists have fled the country for fear of their lives. 30-year-old Noor Ismail Sheikh is one of them. His troubles began when he interviewed some opposition groups critical of the Somali government. The reporting led to his arrest. I was detained for 12 days in Mogadishu. I was detained in the Criminal Investigation Police for a few days and later transferred to the central prison without charge, he says. I was later released. After the release, I started receiving threats from different groups. The threats to my life have forced me to flee the country and come to Kenya. Somalia's Ministry of Information said in a statement Thursday that it disagrees with the rights group's findings. The statement said the report is politically motivated and is aimed at tainting the image of the Somali government, which it said has taken measures to protect journalists and media houses. Somalia is preparing for local and presidential elections next year. The rights organization says the heated political climate may generate more violence against journalists. It is calling on the Somali government to create an environment for journalists and media organizations to operate to inform and help Somalis to make decisions about their next government. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Uganda's Ministry for Gender and Culture is facing a backlash after equating the cultural practice of labia stretching with female circumcision, known as female genital mutilation, because of the damage caused. The traditional stretching of the female genitals by Bantu-speaking tribes in Uganda, Rwanda, and Zambia is believed to have benefits, including greater sexual pleasure. But the pre-marriage practice is criticized for being forced on young girls. As Halima Atumani reports from Kampala, first, a warning to listeners, this story includes content of a sexual nature and descriptions that some may find disturbing.
Cynthia, who for privacy does not wish to use her real name, was 12 years old when a senior female teacher announced that girls at her school, more than 100, would undergo genital stretching. Under pressure from the girls' parents, the school arranged for older women to instruct the girls on how to stretch their labia and to use traditional herbs to make it permanent.
It was painful. It wasn't really something pleasant for me as a person, because at that time you were something like 11 years, you're not sexually active. So why are you doing this thing? Honestly, why are you doing this so-called pulling, whatever people call it? I didn't know why. But because we're many, some days they would say, get a partner. Yeah, get a partner, you do it to each other.
Labia stretching is a pre-marriage tradition in southeastern Africa among Bantu-speaking tribes who believe it gives greater sexual pleasure to both men and women. But Uganda's Minister for Culture and Gender, Peace Mutuzo, sparked controversy this month by calling labia stretching a type of female genital mutilation. She says while FGM that involves cutting or circumcision does much greater physical damage, labia stretching should not be forced on girls.
Children between 8 to 12 are being sensitized, initiated, and the practice takes effect from that time. These are basically babies who have taken to schools for empowerment, for purposes of full growth, to actualize their potential.
For the last 20 years, Hamida Namatavu has been showing girls and women how to stretch their labia. She defends the cultural practice, claiming, unlike FGM, labia stretching has no negative effects, only positive ones. She says, once you do it and you have a marriage partner, that's the only thing that will show him that you are ready. But doctors dismiss the claims. Dr. Vincent Karhanga says, just like FGM, labia stretching is more about pleasing men than women.
Much as it is claimed that pulling can ease birth pain or even make a woman warmer, there is no scientific evidence in this. But what is true is that pulling can actually make the men involved sexually with the women happier with their sexual act.
Nonetheless, labia stretching practitioners are demanding that Mutuzo apologize for undermining their tradition. But she dismisses their call, saying she will continue to speak for the voiceless and discourage the practice until girls reach the age of consent. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Cameroon is launching a program to save its endangered national languages. The Central African state has over 260 national languages, but only 40 are taught in schools. Cameroonians speak mostly French and English, which are foreign but official languages, and part of an entrenched separatist conflict that has cost about 3,000 lives since 2017. Mokedwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
At the multilingual and inclusive government primary school Yaoundé, 150 children between the ages of 5 and 11 years old learn how to count in Ewondo, a Cameroon national language spoken in the country's central and southern regions that comprise two of the Central African state's 10 administrative regions. The students are also taught the national anthem and patriotic songs in Cameroon national languages. Many parents are in the school to see how their children learn to speak in the Ewondo language. 31-year-old businessman Emmanuel Mbom says he is satisfied at the progress made by his 6-year-old son since he is unable to teach his children at home.
In my situation, my wife and I speak two different languages, native languages, so my children try to pick what they can pick.
Mbom says he is confused about which language to teach his children because his language is Sawa, spoken in the littoral and southwest regions of Cameroon, and his wife is from the northwestern town of Nkambe, where the Limbum language is spoken. Cameroon's Secretary of State in the Ministry of Basic Education, Asheri Kilu, says she is satisfied with the level of interest the children display at speaking their national language.
It is very impressive the way the children are taken into learning their languages. And I decided to check how many children are from other regions rather than Yaoundé. And I figured that there were children from all the 10 regions in Cameroon.
Cameroon has 260 national languages spoken by an estimated 25 million people in the 10 regions of the country. It is one of the countries the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization UNESCO classifies as a distinctive cultural density on the linguistic map of the world. The Central African State, however, inherited two foreign languages from its French and English colonial masters as official languages, with 80% of the population speaking French and 20% English. Fabien Freeland, Director General of the non-governmental organization Summer Institute of Linguistics, that helps Cameroon in promoting the teaching and learning of its national languages, says the official languages have not been effective tools of communication.
French and English has its limit for impact on development in this country. When there was a cholera outbreak in the far north, it's only when the information started coming in Fufude that people started changing behavior and the cholera was stopped.
Cameroon's National Institute of Statistics reports that 4% of the Central African State's local languages, including the Mbiamé language, spoken in the country's English-speaking northwest region, and the Ekong language in the south, have disappeared since 1950. 10% of the 260 languages are neglected, and 7% are threatened. Seraphine Ben Bolly, who heads the program to promote the use of Cameroon national languages, says to save the remaining mother tongues from disappearing, they have initiated a pilot program that is being implemented in the 10 regions of the country.
L'Omineduc compte plus de 43 écoles expérimentales multilingues.
She says the Ministry of Basic or Elementary Education is experimenting with the teaching of 5 national languages in 43 schools throughout Cameroon. She says the languages chosen for now include Ewondo, Bassa, Douala, Womala, and Fufudi because of their national popularity. She says apart from the experimental schools, teachers in all educational establishments have received instructions and training to teach Cameroon national languages spoken in the areas where their schools are found. Bolly said Cameroon will by 2030 decide on which of the languages can be used as an official language added to English and French. She said by so doing, they intend to solve the separatist crisis that has within the past 4 years claimed at least 3,000 lives just because people are divided as a result of 2 inherited colonial languages. Separatists have been fighting to create an English-speaking state out of the French-speaking majority. The separatists say the education, legal system and cultural practices they inherited from their British colonial masters are different from those left by the French, who colonized the French-speaking regions of the country. Cameroon believes by having its own national language as an official language, many of its citizens will feel like Cameroonians, unlike in the past when they considered themselves either French or English. UNESCO says it celebrates Mother Tongue Day because it believes in the importance of cultural and linguistic diversity for sustainable societies, and it is within its mandate for peace that it works to preserve the differences in cultures and languages that foster tolerance and respect for others. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to a special recorded program on VOA Africa. I'm Yehigis Wuhib in Washington. Zimbabwe's central bank issued a monetary policy statement that analysts are dismissing as vague on actions to stem the downward spiral of the country's currency and economy. Eddie Gondo gives us more on the story.
In the statement on Monday, Central Bank Governor John Mangujika claimed Zimbabwe is making progress toward enforcing the use of the Zimbabwe dollar as the sole legal tender, saying 189 million transactions valued at 459.6 billion RTGS dollars were completed last year. But economic analysts like Gift Mugano are skeptical.
The opposite is true. The country is actually re-dollarizing, not de-dollarizing. The government has been taken by that growth and supply. Look, we are in an inflationary environment. For the Zim dollar, which we have, is being used as a mechanism to trade in foreign currency. So when you then see the money going through the bank, you can't then say people are depositing money. Then they're accepting Zim dollar.
Last year, the government halted the multi-currency system dominated by the U.S. dollar that had been in place for a decade. Speculation about the cause focused more on political expediency than economic sense, as restive civil servants who were being paid in RTGS began to demand their salaries in U.S. dollars. They argued that the prices of basic goods and services were out of reach as inflation eroded the value of the local currency, whilst U.S. dollars were seen as a safe haven. The U.S. dollar is trading at 22 RTGS on the interbank market and 32 RTGS on the parallel market.
And it is an aspect which central bank is not capturing properly. You know, if you look at international accounting standard number 29, it tells you that in a hyperinflation environment, people reject the local currency for a stable currency.
Economic analyst Mishik Igaro concurs.
I think that the MPS is the kind of movement really to understand. I think that we have dollarized, and de facto everything is not dollarized. Everything is based on the dollar. Even the bank itself is benchmark, bank capitalization in the US. That means they are not confident in benchmarking in our local currency because they know that they will not be in inflation.
When the central bank's policy statement mentioned stabilizing the local currency, economic analysts and business leaders say money supply growth is one of the push factors in the hyperinflationary environment. Sifela Nijawangwe, former president of the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries, says currency stability is a major problem for industry.
What we've noted is the biggest cause of rate instability is money supply, managing liquidity, which is what Vice the governor is focused on. So, you know, again, it's now the implementation.
Analysts also say the lack of consensus between the finance ministry and the Reserve Bank in policy and practice compounds the money supply problems. Critics say government has been simply printing money to pay its bills. Observers say the budget for 2020 set expenditures at $63 billion when money supply in the market was about $20 billion. Mugano expects money supply to grow to $100 billion in the next 4 months as the central bank creates money to catch up with the budget. Meanwhile, economist John Robertson believes the currency instability is due to speculative behavior by cartels and individuals with access to the interbank market. Observers also say those who have borne the weight of government's irrational policies are formal businesses which are not connected to political elites. The question remains as to how much more battering the economy can take through mismanagement. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
Hundreds of South Sudanese students on full government scholarships in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, are stranded after the government abandoned their programs when renewed fighting broke out in 2016. The students say they are starving and homeless. David Monodanga has the story from Juba.
Stranded South Sudanese students who were attending Civil Service University in Addis Ababa say they have received threats and have been intimidated by South Sudan embassy officials in Ethiopia for speaking to the media. Here is one South Sudanese student who was in Addis but returned to Juba and spoke to us on condition of anonymity for safety reasons.
According to the agreement, the government of Ethiopia is supposed to provide the tuition fee, the accommodation, and the feeding. Meanwhile, the government of South Sudan is supposed to cater for the upkeep, medical, and the traveling. The government is no longer providing anything.
A female South Sudanese student in Addis, who also declined to be identified for safety reasons and spoke to Ethiopian journalist Sisai Silo with the Daily Monitor, says she cannot pay for normal daily expenses.
Transport is taking us more than what this government of Ethiopia is offering us here. I went to the director of student service. I complained about my sickness because I have chest problem. I complained to him saying I cannot use cool water anymore. And as a woman, I cannot live without shower. Simply, he told me if you cannot cope with the situation, just withdraw and go home.
When contacted by South Sudan in Focus, the South Sudanese embassy in Ethiopia refused to comment on this story. Israel Behene, an Ethiopian freelance journalist who is also reporting on the stranded students, says South Sudan embassy officials kept postponing his appointment for an interview by several weeks.
I called the ambassador several times and even left him a text message, but he did not respond. So I decided to go to the embassy myself. I met the deputy ambassador, but he was even not willing to talk. Rather, he directed me to the education attaché. All three officials, they refused to talk on record.
Simon Mikanipare, regional coordinator for the Catholic Diocese of Tombora and Yambio, says he met the students while applying for a foreign visa in Addis Ababa. Mikanipare says the student's situation is bad. He says he promised the church's support.
Others have to eat first, and whatever is left is what now they combine and give to our students.
Wendy Mumoges, director of public and international relations at the Civil Service University, says the school was not trying to segregate foreign students from nationals, but admits it did open a separate restaurant for international students.
After an assessment by our university officials and also complaints from the students who didn't want to be isolated from the largest segment of the main student cafe, we have found that the restaurant was unnecessary because we wanted to encourage student socialization.
Adil Atanasio Surur, the undersecretary in South Sudan's Higher Education, Science and Technology Ministry, admits some students on full scholarship were cut off due to hard economic times.
So they are the next group, 2016-2017 upward, they are not getting this support in Ethiopia.
Surur says whenever their money arrives, the students will receive it. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
And that wraps up this special VOA Africa program. I'm Yehius Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you again for tuning in to this recorded program while VOA resolves its technical issues. Thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.